Today's daf in Masechet Ketuvot, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf hey. Woo! Really getting up there. And we're holding on Ayin Tet Amud Beit at the bottom Mishnah. Hamotzi Hotzaot, and since it's the beginning of the daf, we have Richie's beautiful face, but not his voice. So Hamotzi Hotzaot, Al Nichsei Ishto. Here's another issue. This husband, and we hinted to this problem earlier, a husband invests in the nechasim, because after all, he's going to be eating from these nechasim, and it's very important for him to maintain them. Now, that's part of the deal, as we're going to see. So suppose he puts in a lot of money, and then they get divorced. Now, he may have put in $1 million into this thing, because he's put in the latest watering systems, and the whole thing is satellite controlled. Oh my gosh, it's cost him an awful lot of money. And now he goes out and divorces her. He sues for all of this that he's put in. I mean, he can't take it out, and she's walked off with the field now. So what's the deal? Well, I don't care how much he spent in reference relative to how much he got out of it. He may have put in $1 million and so far only got a tiny bit out of it because it was only producing so far for half a year. Or he might have put in very little and had a big crop come out of it and she wants it. Nope. Masha tziotzi, masha akal akal. We understand that this is part of the deal. And that is that he gets the rights to the field that he needs to take care of. Suppose, however, he only invested but has not yet had anything out of the field. So then he can swear how much he spent, and in that case, he can take it. Now, of course, there needs to be some limit to this, and we'll talk about what the limit is in the Gemara. Fine. So when you say if he even ate a little, I mean, what do you mean by a little? What does that mean? 1 year of crop or what? Omer Avasi, I don't care if all he got out of it was one dried thing. Afilu grogeret achat. But he has to eat it with the attitude that this is what he is getting out of his wife's property. So he sits down at the table and he eats this fig like it's, wow. So it has to be derech kavod. Not that he happened to be walking along, sees an old fig there that's lying on the tree and pops it into his mouth. That's not called an acceptance of having eaten from her nechsei malug. That's just like as if he would have eaten something that he found. So, Umar Baba, they say in the Beis HaMedrash that afilu shigra de tamri. Even if you got a little bit of the shigra de tamri, they used to sell pressed dates as slices that were sort of like cookies of pressed dates. So even if he ate one shigra of that, it's over. He can't ask for money for his investment. Boy, Rabivi, what about a chuvtza de tamri? Mao, how about dates that were squished in order to make beer out of them, which basically leaves almost nothing of nourishment in the pressed remains, which is called a chufza, is that considered to be a peiros teiku? That's because it isn't really meant for that type of consumption, essentially. Okay, but how about if he didn't eat it, derech kavod? I mean, obviously, he's not going to be able to avoid the compensation. If he eats the entire peiros and he says, well, I was only eating it as if I found him lying. I mean, there's got to be a limit to that, no? So what would be the shear for that? One said if he eats an iser worth, then that's already being nenev from it. One says a dinner worth is considered to be a proper dinner. And therefore, probably where the word dinner comes from, based on this Gemara, right? So if you eat a dinner worth, that is in fact a proper dinner. Amri dayoni de pumpadisa, ovad revuta uvda bechavileis murais. Now this was interesting. There was a case over here where all that he had was the leftover vines that are usable for feeding to an animal. He didn't get any of the grapes, but there were some of the vines left over. And even in that case, if he divorced his wife afterwards, Rav Yehuda said that this is enough to be get him to lose his right to sue for his big investment. This is Rav Yehuda Shitasa, because Rav Yehuda paskins this way, legabe the dinim of Chazaka, where the dinim of Chazaka were interrupted by Orla. So I said, well, of course, why would I complain that you're sitting in my field if anyway the fruit was Orla? So you didn't take anything from my field. That's why I didn't complain. Or if it's Shemitah, I didn't complain because it's Shemitah. Or if the produce was all Kelayim. Anyway, the field was busted because I didn't get rid of the Kelayim. So there, Reb Yehuda says, but if what you did was you allowed the animal to eat in there, that's enough to give you a chazaka. I raise a chazaka. So you see that according to Reb Yehuda, it is his shita in general, that even a lower class usage is considered to be real usage. Since the true legabe chazaka, it's true legabe considering a malug sada to be having given you perot. Omrev Yaakov, Omrev Chista. Hamotzi hotzaot amirsei shto ketana. Here's an interesting situation. He's married to a ketana min rabbanan. Now, as we know, a ketana's marriage min rabbanan allows her to just walk out at any time that she gets angry, and she can just walk out of the marriage, right? So she doesn't even need a get. This is just a null. So if a guy invested money into her field, that is the equivalent of his investing money into somebody else who didn't ask him to invest. And there the halacha is that you do get a certain amount of, which we'll see, we have to analyze what what amount you get, but over here, you would get. You know why? The Rabbanan wanted the marriage to the ketana to allow a husband to invest in it. Now, normally speaking, how are we going to protect this ketana's nechasim? We're going to say, what? We'll buy a field for her? What do you think a husband who's married to a girl who can walk out at him at any moment, what do you think he's going to do with that field? He's going to basically rape the field. Whatever I can get out of it before she leaves me and just walks out because I didn't let her watch TV tonight. You know, I mean, so I'll get what I can out of the field. And then when she walks out on me, tough on her. So in order to avoid a situation like this, we have to make it possible for a husband who is going to invest and take good care of her field to get his money back. And that's ki echad alo nifsedinu. Really, gentlemen, it's so beautiful to see the sensitivity, the differences, the way in which we need to make a clear din for the particular situation, that it should always turn out to be better and more protective of her, to see the level of the shuk to an, it's just so beautiful. Okay. There was a maisa of a woman who inherited 400 zuz in Bechuzai. Now, it's very difficult to get to Bechuzai, as we've seen many times. And this guy goes ahead, buys a ticket on an airline to go to Bechuzai to be able to collect the money that's owed to her. Anyway, in classic airline fashion, they canceled his continuing flight. The guy had to end up paying through the nose to get the continuing flight. If not, he would have been stuck in the middle of some crummy airport between Bechuzai and Bavel, which nobody ever lands at. Okay, so he pays through the nose to get his ongoing flight. He gets to Bechuzai, collects his 400 zuz that was left to her, and he realizes that he's paid 800 zuz to collect the 400 zuz by the time he gets home. And he says, good heavens. Okay. So he used 600 zuz of his own money to bring back 400 zuz. So when he was on his way home, because of all of these expenses, he ran out of cash. Now, of course, he was on a low cost airline on the way back, and they didn't want to allow him to take on his hand luggage. So he had to pay them an additional zuz for the hand luggage. He doesn't have any zuz left. So he opens up the wallet of the 400 zuz that she collected for her after having bankrupted himself on the tickets to be able to pay for the airline allowing him to take on his carry-on. Fine. So he used her zuz to pay for the carry-on. So Yitzchak lechad zuz, and he took it out of the zuzim that he had collected for her. So then he comes to Rabbi Ami after getting back and his wife yelling at him, would you spend so much time, as usual? And it doesn't help to say, honey, I only did it for you. Ah, you're all the same. Okay, this time he couldn't take it anymore, and he actually divorces her. So now he goes to court because he wants to get his money back. He says, I invested $600 in order to get her $400, and I want the money. So he comes to Rabbami, and Rabbami said to him, well, I mean, you told me that you actually were nene from her money. So it says in the Mishnah, Masha Otsiotsi, Masha Chalachal, you took that zuz, and therefore you can kiss your 600 zuz goodbye. So Rabbami had made a mistake over here because he didn't realize, the husband told him the details. He said, I took one zuz from the thing. He thought that the husband took the zuz for purposes of his own business dealings. He didn't realize that he took the zuz in order to be able to get home with the extra charge of the airline. So he therefore thought that he was taking advantage of it for an investment of his wife's money. So the Rabbanan who were there and who knew this story, they said to Rabbami, but he didn't use the money for himself. That, I mean, obviously the Mishnah is saying that, but only in the case where he was nene from the parents. Here he wasn't nene from the parents. He just needed another zuz to pay the airline. And over here, he was taking from the Karen, and it was was part of his expense account. It was not anything that he ended up being nene from. So he should be actually given the money that he invested. So Rabbami says, well, he didn't say that. Im kein, that's what happens. So then it's a classic case of hotzi v'lo achal. So then let him swear how much he was bimotzi, and then he can get the whatever it is that he spent. Omer Ravas, v'hu shiyeh shevach k'neged hotza'ah. Now look, obviously, there's got to be a limit to this. I mean, how can he sue for more than the value it is? So now it's not clear what Rabbasi is saying. That's one possible way to understand Rabbasi, that it's only true where the value of the shevach, let's say he put in the watering system, and now he wants her to pay for the watering system. Okay, does the value of the field on the open market reflect $1 million of additional value? Normally, as you know, the answer is no. So you think you're going to sell your house, you're going to put in $20,000 for a beautiful new facing for your home, and that way you're going to up the sale. You're not going to up the sale. It's going to sell at the same price as the next door's house. The only thing is it'll make it easier to sell. That's what usually happens. So you can't come along and say, well, I put in so much money. The guy's going to say, I put in $1 million. Look, buddy, the field on the open market is only worth $20,000 more. So we're really sorry that you invested all of that money. Okay, so that is one obvious understanding of what Rabbasi is saying. It's only where your expenses are not going to be more than the additional value that accrued to the field, which makes a heck of a lot of sense. And that would mean that you can collect, like it says, that if you need to collect, you collect. But the other way of understanding it would be that it's nogea the din of whether nishava kamahotzi. And that all Rabbasi was trying to say is that if he actually put in money which gave her a greater value because of the shevach than the money he put in, it makes sense that he should be able to get it because why would he have to swear? He could get it from her because in the end she got more than that. So why should she be able to force him to take a shvuah? That's one approach. But the other approach is what we said, that even if you're nishba, what it is that you can recoup is only limited by what it is that the value went up by. You can't say, I put in $1 million and therefore she should have to pay you the $1 million when the additional value was only $20,000. So l'mayilcha, so what did he mean? Omer Abaye, he only meant to say that if she ended up with more, no telet hotza'ah below shavua. That's what it means. Omalei Rava, that's insane. Then what you're saying is that you're rejecting the obvious logic I'm saying that the guy can't swear and take more money from her than he added value to her field. Just so then what's the limit? I don't understand. Imkain Atila Rume. He can always swear whatever you want and what? And get it out of her? Of course not. Of course Rabasi has to be saying that there's a maximum and that that maximum is in fact the value that it accrued to her. Elama Rava. What Rabasi meant is that if there was more expenses than there were on the improvement, he only gets, but always with the Shavua, he only gets as a maximum, he only gets the amount of whatever it was the improvement is. Whereas according to you, let's imagine a situation where you're saying, well, the guy doesn't have to swear if he's not taking more than she gets. It's only fair. Is it really? Let's imagine a case where the field has been improved for $10,000 because he did a brilliant job with $5,000 of investment in ways that really made the whole field more attractive. Okay. Now, when according to this, what you're telling me is that when he comes along, he can get away without making a shvua, and he can say, I put in $9,999. And I'll say, well, okay, then that's what you get, because after all, you left behind $10,000. I mean, that's straight out robbery. But why would she have to pay for that without a shvua? That doesn't make sense to me. And therefore, it makes much more sense to say Ravasi was talking about always with a shvua and just explaining what the maximum is that you can collect. Now, another question that we need to determine is, what happens if a husband, instead of working the property, he goes ahead and he brings arisim into the property? So he has sharecroppers in the property, and now he divorces his wife. In this case, what's the din? Because the sharecroppers themselves invest in the property. And normally, if a husband gets rid of them, forget about a husband, if the owner gets rid of them, then they have a right to part of what it is that they invested in improvements. So we could say that, look, I mean, they understood that they cannot have more rights in the field than the husband himself has, right? So I died to the Baal Nachas. So since in the end, the Malug was Peres, produced Peres that the Baal was Nenef from, they knew perfectly well that if this guy goes ahead and divorces his wife, they're up the creek without a paddle because they can't be better than he is. So they understood that. And that means it was part of the risk of accepting this deal. So you could say that. And therefore, if the Baal is out of luck, they're out of luck. So he's stalikly Baal, he's stalikly lohu. They go out the door together with the husband. Or what we could say is, forget about the fact that the husband was the one who brought them in. Look at the property. Does the property need work or not? We've got over here somebody who owns a piece of property. It's just sitting there. And obviously what everybody does with that kind of situation, which we know from our own experience, you go to someone in the neighborhood. Best thing is if it's the next door neighbor, who is farming, and you say, okay, add my fields to your farming and we'll share the profits. That's sharecropping. And it's extremely common today. This is the norm that people do if they're not going to work it themselves. So you could say, look at the land. If the land is crying out for sharecroppers, so then it happens to be that the husband brought them in. But they say, listen, buddy, this land needed work. I did the work. I don't give a hang whether it was your phone call that gave me permission or his phone call that gave me permission. But basically, the Ara Kikaima, the way this land stands here, it's waiting for me. And therefore, when I go down into it, it's only reasonable that I am doing a standard sharecropper deal, okay? Maske Florova Bar of Hanan. I don't understand why this is different than a guy who goes into somebody else's field without permission, and he goes ahead and he plants trees in it, and he does all kinds of improvements. The halacha over there is that we do evaluate the value of the current field as opposed to what it was before, taking into consideration the amount of money that he put in. The deal is, of course, that Yodo ala tachtona, he certainly cannot collect the amount that he put in if he hasn't done at least that amount of improvement. But that's just as we give him at least that much. So why would we give these people less than we give him? No, this is going to hold on a second. In there where these people go in, nobody else is available to do that work. And therefore, the guy who did the work and this other person comes back from his trip overseas a year later and, oh my gosh, who did this and planted me a beautiful orchard and so on? That's different. I don't lose anything. I'm only gaining. So why shouldn't I have to pay? Masha Einkein over here, the woman can say, get out of here. This lazy bum got a bunch of sharecroppers in there that now I'm supposed to pay. He was the one that was supposed to be working the field. So therefore, let him worry about the sharecroppers. I'm dumping them the same way that my husband dumped me. He's out. They're out. Goodbye. But here, Ika Bal de Torach. How can you compare it? Okay, bottom line. What is the deal? My hobby alone. Omer Avuna Bereder of Yeshua. It depends. Hazina. If the Baal himself is the equivalent of the Aris, meaning he is an expert at farming, so then that's a good taina. He would have worked the field himself. So then it's true what she's saying. Yistalik le Baal, yistalik lehu. If we dump the husband, then we dump anybody that he brought in. But what if the Baal himself wouldn't have known what to do? She can't say the Baal would have taken care of it. This Baal is an accountant who sits in an office, which is going to say, well, he would have worked the land. Right. Ask Ira how easy it is for an accountant to work the land. So therefore, obviously, he would have come along and taken Arisim. So then it's true what the Arisim are saying. This land is crying out for me. And we've been examining the nature of the rights that the Baal has to the property that is called Nechse Malug, which is a property that he only gets the right to the Peirot. So what we discussed at the beginning of the Daf was the question of what is the status of the people if he would get sharecroppers into this, what would be the din about the sharecroppers vis-a-vis their rights to be thrown out like the husband is, or do they keep their own rights? They have to be compensated in the event that he divorces her. Those questions we spoke about, and it turns out that it depends whether the husband was capable of taking their place, whether the land actually cries out for them, and so on. Now we start with another question. What would be the din? When we say that we give the husband the right to eat the pears, is that a direct financial right to those pears? So let's say that he wants to sell the property to someone else, and that someone else, by paying him a lump sum, will be able to be zocha to the peros. So can he do that? In other words, he's translating the rights to the peros to money that he wants to put into an investment, perhaps, or he wants to just spend in a nightclub. We'll see that it actually might make a difference what he wants to do with the money. So what would be the din? Me abrin and maidakani akne. Look, I mean, this is a legal right that he has. So whatever he was kona, he can be makna to this other person. Or do we say it isn't quite so simple? It's only mishum rav arbeta. One way of looking at the whole idea over here of the Baal being able to take the peros of the nechse malug is, surprisingly, that it is part of what it is that we do to make life better for the woman. And that's because in the event that he's bringing in all of this extra money, which is the peirot, ultimately the household benefits, there's going to be more money in the house and more things to eat in the house, and that's good for her. But for him to translate that into cash, and then she gets nothing out of it, maybe the Rabbanan never gave him the right to do that, and in that sense, he doesn't even own it for such a purpose. Yehuda Mar Bar Marim Bar Mishmei de Rava Amar. So one approach in the name of Rava is that it is not a very nice thing that he did, but Masha Asa Asui. Whereas Rav Papa, also quoting Rava, says not true. What Rava actually said is that it's meaningless. He had no right to sell that. It was never given to him for that purpose. It was given to him to take into consideration the ultimate addition that it's going to make in the actual lifestyle of the home. And by the way, says Rav Papa, I just want you to know that this whole stuff that Yehuda Mar Bar Marema was saying, he was quoting Rava in the opposite way that I quoted Rava. He didn't really hear that from Rava. He thought that that was what Rava must hold based on an inference. So Michalola Itmar, he heard a psak of Rava, but he misunderstood it. What happened was like this. If you want to hear stories about rotten husbands, you know. So here's a wife, you know, gets married and she's, you know, from a good family. She brings in two maids as Nirsei Malug so that he is able to be nene from the work of these maids, but they belong to her. Anyway, this brilliant guy goes ahead and he marries an additional wife, right? And he takes one of the maids that his first wife brought him and he says, okay, your job's going to be to take care of my new wife. Oh, God. Obviously, his original wife, sued him. And she went to Bezdin and Rava's Bezdin. And she was sovka. She was complaining that her husband did this to her, but he dismissed the case. Lo ashkachba. Now, the reason that what happened over here to Yehuda Mar Bar Maremar is that he misunderstood. He thought that the reason, Mandachosa, Savim Shundasava Mashasasri, he thought that Rava dismissed the case because he was of the opinion that if a husband goes ahead and sells his nechsei malug, he can. So in this case, so to speak, he sold a nechsei malug by giving the maid as a gift to this new wife. So it's the same idea. Obviously, he could only give the rights to her work, but it's effectively what's there. But it's not true. That is not Rava's opinion. Rava's opinion is precisely the way I said it, says Rav Papa, that actually a husband only has rights to nechsei malug if they are going to raise the life style of the house. And the truth is that the only reason he dismissed the case is because in this particular case, Shakaravach, even though he gave this maid away, but he gave it to the other wife. And basically, this maid's going to be at work at cleaning the floors and at cooking and so on and so forth. And everybody's going to end up gaining from it, in which case the lifestyle is actually supported, even though he went ahead and he did this gift. In this particular case, it's not the same as selling it. But ein hachinami, if he had tried to sell it, I know, says Rav Papa, from Rava, that he would have held that it would have been batal. And therefore, all of the psak of Yehuda Mar Bar Maremar is completely mistaken because he did not understand what he saw. The halacha is, if he tries to translate that right into cash, it's meaningless. And the basis of that is, because, I mean, we did hear one obvious basis at the beginning is when we raised the question. Was it only giving it to him as Ravach Beta? It happens to be that the Gemara knows that there were other issues involved and therefore wants to talk it out. So my Taima, Abaye, disagreed with the whole thing from the beginning. He said the problem over here was that if he's going to sell it, then he is going to end up ruining the field. Why? Because in this case, remember that the buyer who's only buying rights to something that are, he has absolutely no idea when these rights are going to expire. I mean, if these guys aren't getting along and the husband divorces her, he's out his rights because the husband only had right to pay rent as long as they're married. So what's he going to do? He says to himself, I mean, you know, normally if a guy would sell me this kind of thing, I would invest. And I'm not going to invest here. I mean, tomorrow they may get into a fight and then what happens to my investment? Forget it. So therefore, what he tries to do is get out what he can immediately. But in doing that, he can destroy the fertility of the field. And therefore, the case here is a problem because if the husband himself is going to invest, of course, he wants to invest because, first of all, it's up to him whether he's going to end the marriage. But furthermore, if the wife dies, he gets to keep it. In the case of being sold to somebody else, if the wife dies, the husband takes it over, and her sale is meaningless. So therefore, we don't allow him because of the destruction of the woman's property. That's Abaye Svara. And we already saw that Rav Svara was Mishum Revach Beita, that the whole idea was that he was only given these rights in the first place because we wanted a higher standard of living. And in this case, there would not be any higher standard of living since there are no extra pairs coming in. And he just took the money and made some kind of investment. As far as I know, he might have gone ahead and gone to gamble the money away. I don't know what he did with the money. And it turns out that that's an important consideration, because is there a practical difference? In other words, I understand we have to worry Shema Tichsof and we have to worry Mishum Revach Beita. Tell me the difference between those two concerns. There's a big difference between them. Imagine a situation where the Nichsei Malug was all right along the city. So every time they went out, the husband goes out, he passes by the field. And if he sees that the land is not being taken care of, then obviously he's going to call this guy to court. I mean, it was given to him with responsibilities for maintenance. In that case, we don't have to worry that there's going to be a pagam in the karka. So that would mean that Abaye's reason is not the correct reason there, if that's the reason, then we would let him sell. Or how about a case where the husband is the one who's doing the farming and the other guy is getting the payra? So in that case, since the husband's doing the farming, he won't allow any damage to the field. Or another case would be if the husband translates it into money for an investment which generates money. So in that case, Rava's reason isn't a good reason, because in the end, there's going to be money coming in. They're getting every month a certain amount of money from the investment. And because of that, there is a support of the quality of life in the home. And this brings us right up to Sir Richard, who is dangerously close to Doc.
Oh, dangerously.
Trying to do a good job.
Good thing he's so far away. Zuk the Halek Mishnah.
Doc, very good. Very good. The fear factor is working. Shomeret Yavam. Shenaflula Nichasim. Now, we were talking before, remember the whole question, about what happens in the event of an Arusa who inherits, or a pre-Arusa who inherits, or a pre-Nesua, and then she's a Nesua. I went through all of the four different stages in which we would have to determine what the din is, if she's allowed to sell, or if she does sell, whether it is a good sell. And that was a very important part of our understanding the nature of the money. Which we said, that's the bottom line. That's the infrastructure of the ksuva in terms of the takonas of the ksuva. Now, there's an interesting question, because in the event that the husband-to-be, or the actual husband, if we're talking about an arus or an isua, dies, and he dies without children, obviously, in the case of the arusa, and she is now a shomer ziyavam, he has a husband. And this is a fascinating situation, because basically she is in the middle over here. In other words, the Yavama is not the same as the Arusa, because the Arusa, it's a given that the point of the Erisin is that it's meant to lead to Nisuin. So what we called it was an incipient Nisuin, and the ownership was an emergent ownership. And in Masha'inkein, in here, the case of the Shomeret Yavam, there's no reason to say that it is a step towards an actual marriage. It could just as easily be, as Tosfos points out, a step towards Chalitza. So we don't have those kind of assumptions that we had by the Arusa, and therefore it's not going to be the same. And indeed, in this case, Modim Beit Shemaya Beit Hillel, in her status as a Shomeret Yavam, she can do what she wants. Even lechatchila, mocheret v'notenet v'kayam. So if she's selling that property before the Yibum, that it is actually a valid sale, and it was entirely up to her to do that kind of thing. Now, question gets very interesting when we're talking about a Shomer at Yavam who dies before there was any response to the state of Shomer at Yavam. There was no Yibum. There was no Chavitza. And now the question is, what exactly is her status in that case, Benogea, the various properties? Because the question, there's a very basic question about the issue of a Shomeres Yavam, which we had in Mesechet Yavamot. So do we view a Shomeres Yavam as being an actual, is she considered to be like a Nesua to her husband or not? So on the one hand, if she would be a real Nesua, if she would have been a real wife, so then she wasn't able. We know what happens in that case, that he would actually inherit her, the husband, if he were a husband. But, I mean, over here, if you don't hold, and this was a whole big question we had back in Masechet Yevamot, that the actual case of Shmira of Yibon, that Zika creates a state of a Nesua, if it does not, so then since he's not really her husband, who would inherit her? The family from whence she comes, her paternal family. And therefore, what we have over here is a suffix because we have not determined what her status is. And because of that, we have three things that we're going to have to determine. Number one, what happens to the ksuva itself? The 200 plus whatever tosefet that he might have written, or 100 if she was Yavama. And that might even include, but that's a big machlokas, as we'll see, whether that includes even the words, the ktuva ta in general, because remember that the ktuva includes, generally speaking, the basic ktuva, that's called the ikar ktuva ta, and that's the 100 or the 200, and that is always the given. And then we have also the Tosefet, which very often Osman will add. And then we also have the question of the Nechasim, which are called Son Barzel, which are written down in the Ketuvah. So now the question is, we've got three different issues, really. The Nechset Son Barzel, the actual Ketuvah and the Tosefet, and the Nechset Malur. So the Nechsei Maluk are called Nechasim HaNichnasim V'Yotzim Ima. Why? Because remember, the husband never owns the Nechsei Maluk. He only gets the right to eat the peras. So it turns out, we're going to be quoting over here, basically the Mishnah we had in Yevamos. It's a very misleading Mishnah, and the Gemara goes through there an agonizing analysis of, first of all, why do we have the Pesukim that we have in the Mishnah? And what is really meant in the machlokas of Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, which turns out to be very not what it appears to be saying. And we'll jump to the end of the sugya over there, because the Gemara here is not really interested in going into the details that we went into in Yevamos. So it turns out that Beit Shammai Omrim, Beit Shammai says, look, we haven't been able to establish whether she is called a real wife, or she's not called a wife. If she's a wife, then the Yavam would inherit, if he's considered to be a husband. If she's not a wife, then her father's household, which is all her heirs would inherit. So even though Beit Shammai says, Yachliku Yorshe Abal im Yorshe Av, which on the surface seems to be referring to all of the above issues, what shall we do with the Ksuva and with the Nechsei Tzom Barzel and with the Nechsei Maluk? It turns out that the Gemara in Yevamos proves that it's not what Beit Shammai was saying, and that Beit Shammai was only referring to one aspect, and that was only the Nechsei Maluk. As far as Tzom Barzel is concerned, and as far as the Ksuva is concerned, Beit Shammai agrees with Beit Hillel. So this piece about the Yachloku is the only machlokas of Beit Shammai Beit Hillel here, and it's a reference specifically to Nechsei Maluk. Beit Hillel Omrim, the Nechasim are Bechazkatan, whoever is in possession. And that would mean, so again, Ksuva Bechazkatan is itself a very confusing kind of language. What does Nechasim b'chtuva tami. So the Gemara in Bava Basra has a big machlokas about who is considered to be the one who possesses them. Because on the one hand, the husband who was holding the nechsei meluk and is chayev to take care of any kind of damages and so on. I mean, what would that be referring to? Would that be, is he considered therefore to be, is it his? Is it theirs? It's not at all clear. So if we're talking about the nechasim that are nechsei tzon barza, so what would you say? Who's the owner? I mean, technically speaking, they were hers. She brings them in, but he has to guarantee them 100%. So if anything happens to them, even something that's out of anybody's control, he's going to be paying for them. And in that case, just like we saw Shoel as the din of an owner, because anything that happens is his responsibility. So then we can look at the Tzon Barzel as two different things. And it's a machlokas, which one Beis Hillel is saying. Is the Nichsei Tzon Barzel hers, meaning her family's, or is the Nichsei Tzon Barzel the husband's because he was responsible for them? The Ktuva is Becheskas Yorshei Habal. Now that's talking for sure about the 100 or 200 and the Tosefet. Here it for sure doesn't refer to the Nichsei Tzon Barzel because that was the first part that we said, that they are Becheskatan. So the ksuva, look, the ksuva hasn't been paid yet. And the ksuva obviously is in the bank account of the people who still have that bank account. And that's the husband's family, not her father's family. And as far as the nechse malug, which are the nechasima yotzimima, those things are for sure considered to be the father's, says Beis Hillel. Because, and this is where Beit Shammai argues, because since we never gave them to him except for the peros, so the goof always belonged to her. And therefore, if we haven't defined the nyovam as a husband, so then her heirs, meaning the father's family, takes it. And here's where machlokas Beit Hillel Beit Shammai was pertinent. Now, suppose Hiniach achiv ma'ot. Now let's determine the status of various things that were left. Remember that a yavam, when he does do yibam, he does not write a separate ksuva. What happens is that the ksuva is still the ksuva that was there originally written from the now deceased brother. And all of the property that was originally mishubad for this ksuva remains mishubad even after the yibam. So now let's say that the brother died leaving cash behind. That cash has to be invested, and it's something that is hers. And therefore, the idea is that since it was all mortgaged to her, so to speak, then if we allow him to use up the cash, then she doesn't have anything, but she wouldn't be able to have that cash to be able to get her ktuva from. And since the ktuva was originally written by the now deceased husband with everything that he owns backing it, so what do we do? If the brother, the yavam, is now going to take the cash, then she's not going to be able to collect the ktuva from it. Therefore, the cash has to be turned into real estate. And then he gets, of course, to be nene from all of that real estate. Now, this is going on Libet Rabbi Meir, who holds that even cash is actually meshubed to the ksuva. Remember, we spoke about that earlier. So, if that's the case, and we'll see later on that this is Libet Rabbi Meir again also, then he needs to invest it. How about if the brother died leaving peirot? Well, it's the same thing, because again, everything, including metaltalim, which is peirot, is meshubat or ksuva, and therefore the yavam's going to have to buy real estate, and he eats the peirot. Suppose there were peirot that were attached still to the ground. So Rabbi Meir gives his old idea. So what we do is we have to take a look, see how much that property was worth at the time of the death. And then we'll see how much it would have been worth without peirot, how much it's worth with the peirot that was there, And that is basically what it was that was Beshubat Ruksuva, and that the difference between those two values, we need to buy land, and he eats peros. And here too, the Chachomim say, Perot HaMechubarim Lekarka belongs directly to the Yavam, which doesn't make any sense, because it sounds like it's saying that that's not part of Ruksuva, which, why wouldn't it be? If the Truah was there at the time that the husband was alive, so then it's part of what he left that she can get the Ksuva from. All of this will be discussed in the Gemara. As far as Tlushim are concerned, so the Tlushim in Akarka, if it's just lying there on the ground, so then it depends who gets there first when he dies. If he, the Yavam, came first, then he can take it, and she'd have to be motzi. If she comes first, then yilakach bem karka v'hu ochel peirot. So again, this part is going agalui by the Rabbanan or again Rabbi Meir, and they say metaltalim are not mishuba to the ksuva. Although if she went ahead and she was tofes metaltalim, now that's something else. If she's tofes at metaltalim, we don't take them away from her, and therefore in this case, it would still be that it has to be something that he gets the rights to in terms of the payrot, because otherwise they're just going to disappear. Fine. But at least it becomes her karka. Now, if he goes ahead and he's koneser with Yibam, she becomes his wife in every single manner. The Gemara is going to ask what that means. What do you mean a wife, l'kol davar? There's only one difference between a Yavama and a woman that someone married. The only difference is that her ksuva is going to be still chal on the property of the first husband, which means that the entire estate is now mishubat to that ksuva, which means, at least this is what the Mishnah seems to be saying over here, which means that he can't say to her, okay, I'm putting down the money for your ksuva, what's that ksuva worth? $300,000, right? Taking everything into consideration, here's the cash, $300,000. Now, the other $500 million of your husband's estate, I really need to do business with, and I'm going to sell and so on. You can't keep me locked up because of your lousy $300,000, and I can't touch the entire estate. Oh, yes, she can, because she could say, look, we're going to see there's a number of considerations here, but what we think it means now is that, in fact, as long as that she'ibud is there, we cannot force her to accept anything else. And she has a right to say, if there's going to be a ksuva, I'm not going to rely on the fact that you got a safe deposit box. I don't know what's going to happen to the cash in that safe deposit box. I want to make sure that whatever I could possibly get, I'm going to get. You never know from one day to the next in this market what all of that property is worth. Okay, so she has a right to say that, and you can't force her to accept the ksuva. So lo yomer la rektuva teich munachat ala shulchan. The bottom line is kol nechasav achraim lektuvata, just like it's written in that ksuva, kol nechasai achraim, and so on. And in the end, of course, we even insert into our nusach of the ksuva that even metaltalin are actually included. Everything is mechuyev to that, and therefore you can't say that to her. But what's interesting is you can't even say this to your wife. You can't say to your wife, I'm giving you a safe deposit box that has the money that covers your entire ksuva. By the way, remember that a shulchan means a bank, really. It doesn't mean a table in the dining room. So it actually is referring to a safe deposit box. Now that part doesn't make so much sense. And the Gemara is going to talk about it. I mean, why can't he do that? Why can't you remove the lien from the other properties you have by actually setting aside money for it? Now, if after he's meyabim her, the Yavam goes out and divorces her, then of course, at that point, ain la elektuva. I mean, she can't take everything. She only had a lien on everything. But once she's paid off, she's paid off. And then she loses her lien, obviously. If he then goes ahead and he remarries her, Hirzira. So then, Harehika Kolanashim, she's like any other woman who was divorced and gets remarried. And the din in that case is that if a husband divorces his wife and immediately remarries her and never ended up paying her ksuva, then we always take for granted, unless they define it differently, that the new marriage is on the understanding of the original marriage. Whatever that ksuva was, that ksuva remains. We don't say, let's give the girl two ksuvas, one for the first marriage, one for the second marriage. Same thing is true over here. If the Yavam divorces her and then he takes her back right away, so then it's an understanding that she's like any other woman that got remarried, which means that it's on the same basis as it was before. That is to say that only the estate of the original husband who's now deceased is meshubet to the ksuva. And we're going to see that this makes some very important legal maneuvers a possibility. And that's exactly what we're going to get into tomorrow.